This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at numberfire.com, and this is episode 54 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Week 3 hit me hard. You guys don't care about my fantasy teams, so no, I'm not talking about my fantasy teams. I'm talking about my recommendations. I'm talking about my start-sit choices. I'm talking about my sell players from last week's 15 transactions column. I'm talking about Chris Thompson and Jordan Howard and Jay Cutler. And I guess you could even throw in my random post-week one rant about Le'Veon Bell versus Kareem Hunt. All of those things hit me hard in week 3. Sure, yeah, things were fine too. I was high on the Bengals offense entering the week, and Kareem Hunt is my dude, and he is a freaking beast. So things were not all that terrible. But the misses sting a lot more than the hits, and people remember the misses a lot more than the hits too. It's just how it is in my world, and it sucks. But like I said, I'm going to get things wrong all the time. Winning in fantasy football isn't about just getting everything right, but it's about adjusting when you get things wrong. But in turn, I've gotten a lot of questions about players that I've written about over the first 3 weeks of the season. You know, like Jordan Howard and Chris Thompson, the highly discussed players in fantasy football. And this week's podcast will hopefully go over a lot of those guys. But before digging into the 15 transactions for this week's show, and actually that's 16 because this podcast is a bonus transaction that you can't get from the column that's written on numberfire.com each week, I've got to tell you about this new app that you can use in conjunction with your FanDuel lineups for NFL and MLB DFS. It's called FanDuel Scout, and it's become a must-use for me when I'm rolling out multiple lineups for a given slate. All you do is download FanDuel Scout from the App Store, then you sync it to your FanDuel account. Once you do that, whenever news breaks about a player in your lineups or there's any big news that will impact what you want to do, you'll get a push notification letting you know that you may need to change your lineups. It's free and it's incredibly helpful. So download FanDuel Scout today to make sure you get up-to-the-minute updates with your DFS lineups. Now let's get to these transactions. Sell Jordan Howard. Okay guys, I know you're sick of it and you think that I'm just beating a dead horse, but I promise you that's not the case. And I don't hate Jordan Howard. I think Jordan Howard is a very good running back. Selling Jordan Howard has little to do with Howard himself. It's all about situation. Now, the Bears have a good offensive line and a pretty underrated defense, and that could realistically keep them in games. But, they also have questionable quarterback play and a group of wide receivers who caught one pass in Week 3's win. They had one reception in a victory in Week 3. So to me, I think there's reason to question the sustainability of this Bears offense. I don't think that's that crazy. And it has nothing to do with the talented running backs that they have in the backfield. It's everything surrounding those backs. It's the quarterbacks. It's the wide receivers. So let's just look at what Howard has done so far. He's been a top 12 running back on the year in PPR formats, but he's played a smaller percentage of his team snaps than 20 other running backs in the league. A key reason that he's been able to produce is because he's been scoring touchdowns and he's seen high usage while he's actually on the field. Howard's played 56% of Chicago's snaps this year, but he's seen a rush on 41% of those plays. That's the 12th highest rushing usage rate in the league among backs who are seeing 20 or more snaps per game. And among backs who are seeing 50% or more of their team snaps, that's the 4th highest usage rate. Now, is that 41% mark sustainable? Maybe. He ran the ball on 39% of his snaps last season, so that's not that far off. But here's the thing, he also didn't have any competition in the backfield last year. He's playing 56% of the team snaps, but when he broke out in Week 4 last season, he played fewer than 56% of the team snaps in just 2 games. He just has not been on the field nearly as much in 2017. And when you're not on the field as much, you absolutely need a higher usage rate in order to sustain the production from that previous season. And then there's the touchdown piece. Right now, Jordan Howard has 50% of Chicago's offensive touchdowns. And he scored a touchdown on every 15 rushes and about 65 rushing yards. If you regress those numbers by using data over the last 6 years from running backs, his total touchdowns should be 1.25 rather than 3. Touchdown regression is going to hit Jordan Howard eventually. So all of this is to say that yes, I think that Howard should be a usable running back asset in fantasy football moving forward. I thought that was the case last week and the week before that, and it seems like every single week when I say sell Jordan Howard. If a running back sees volume in fantasy football, he's going to be usable. The topic of conversation here to me, though, is ceiling. And given all of this, the touchdown regression, his usage, the fact that Tariq Cohen is in that backfield, I still would see if someone in your league sees him as a relatively high RB2 or a low-end RB1, because I think he might end the season more as that mid RB2 and perhaps a lower RB2 if this offense struggles. Drop Cam Newton. So Cam Newton has now faced the 49ers, the Bills, and the Saints, and he's combined to score 33.24 fantasy points. What's even worse about that number is over 10 of those points have come on the ground, meaning his arm is averaging just 7.5 standard fantasy points per game. That's the 30th lowest average among passers with 30 or more attempts this year. And he's played the 49ers, who were just destroyed by Jared Goff, and the Saints, who were destroyed by literally everyone. Now, I think there's a lot of things at play here. I think that the shoulder injury is still hurting Newton, and I also think that the offense in general is not creative enough, or at least not creative enough just yet. But it doesn't really matter for fantasy purposes. You cannot trust him right now. You cannot trust him until you see something. And given the replaceability of the quarterback position in general in fantasy football, I think that he's fine to drop, and you can start embracing the streaming life. Buy Joe Mixon. You know, Mixon was a buy on this podcast last week because I liked the fact that they got rid of Ken Zampezi, their offensive coordinator, and they were moving over to Bill Lazor. Literally anything was better. And Joe Mixon was outperforming all the other running backs in that backfield. So I'm kind of happy in the leagues that I didn't get him in a trade that he didn't score this past week, because I think that he'd be more difficult to get if he did. But his peripheral numbers looked really good. He was on the field for 56% of the team snaps. He saw 18 of a possible 28 running back attempts in week 3, and he was targeted more than anyone on that roster not named AJ Green. And like I said, he's been the most effective back in that backfield. According to NumberFire's net expected points metric, he has a 37.14% success rate on the season. Jeremy Hill's rate is 26%. Gio Bernard's is 20%, meaning 37% of Joe Mixon's runs have been deemed a success. It's a little bit below average, but it's a lot better than the other backs in his backfield. I think Joe Mixon's role is only going to get bigger, and they get the Browns and the Colts in 2 games over the next 4 weeks. I think that he's a definite buy right now. Drop Eric Ebron. If you've listened to this podcast throughout the offseason, you know that I loved Eric Ebron coming into the season as a late round tight end to target, that he had top 5 tight end upside. I don't think that's happening. Ebron's basically been a ghost in 2 of the 3 games that Detroit has played this season. And in the 1 game where he wasn't, it was against the Giants defense that is literally atrocious against defending tight ends. He's only been on the field for about 67% of Detroit snaps, and he's got the 15th highest target market share in the league among all tight ends. The floor for Eric Ebron was that he was going to see some volume, and that hasn't really been there this season. I think in most league formats, you can send him to the waiver wire and you can start streaming the dumpster fire of a position that is tight end. Add Brandon Oliver. Now, I don't think Brandon Oliver is an every down back by any means. And this is another reason why handcuffing your elite running backs does not pan out very often. But Melvin Gordon has a knee injury. He was sidelined for a good bit of the second half on Sunday, and Brandon Oliver ended up playing 45% of Los Angeles' snaps as a result of that. He didn't do much with his workload. He had 16 rushing yards, but in the event that Gordon's knee isn't strong enough to play in week 4, Brandon Oliver would walk into a strong workload and situation. And as a result of that, I think that I would add him off the waiver wire this week. Sell Chris Thompson. I know you guys were waiting for it because I talked about selling Chris Thompson last week, and what did Chris Thompson do? He dominated on national television. I looked like an idiot. I get it. That happens in this profession. I mentioned it last week, though. I love Chris Thompson as a player. When I say sell Chris Thompson, I'm not saying sell Chris Thompson the player. I'm saying sell Chris Thompson the player and the situation. If I say someone is a sell on this podcast or in my 15 transactions column, that doesn't automatically mean that that player is worthless. It just means that the market may view him as a better asset than where my head is at. Now, I wrote this analogy in my article, so I'll just read it. I said, if you put a couch on Craigslist, you're not doing it saying, yo, guys, this couch is totally awful and you'll get every disease on earth if you sit on it. The reason you're selling it in the first place is to extract value. And that's where I am with Chris Thompson. Given his production to this point, what he's done in 2017 is not sustainable. And if someone in your league thinks that it is, then you may be able to get something strong in return. You know, I talk about regression all the time on this podcast, and it's crazy for Chris Thompson right now. He's now scored 2.67 PPR fantasy points per touch, so that's receptions plus rushes, which is almost a full point more than the second place Kareem Hunt. Think about that for a second. Every time he catches the ball or runs the football, he is scoring 2.67 PPR fantasy points. That is absurd. He's also scored a touchdown on the ground for every 7 rushing attempts and a touchdown through the air for every 6.5 receptions. Over the last 6 seasons, an average running back has scored on every 35.5 rushes and about every 29 receptions. So we're talking 7 rushing attempts per touchdown for Chris Thompson versus an average of 35.5. He is 5 times more efficient than the average running back. When statistics are this dramatic, even if the player is really, really good, luck factors into the equation. Chris Thompson, guys, has been very lucky. That does not mean that he's bad. He's now seen 19 targets in 3 games, which is the 5th most in football at the running back position. And his usage without Rob Kelly in week 3 was not bad at all, especially the fact that he played in a positive game script. He was on the field for 41% of the team's snaps, he carried the rock 8 times, and he saw 7 targets. That's not bad usage. But to assume that he'll be an RB1 or even a high-end RB2 from here on out, especially in a standard format, that would be completely foolish. Could something like that happen? Yes. Football is a game of small sample sizes, so literally anything is possible. But is it likely? No, I don't think so at all. And I like to play probability when I play fantasy football. Hold Terrell Pryor. I think one of the most disappointing early round picks this season has to be Terrell Pryor. He's basically been the anti-Chris Thompson in terms of efficiency. Now, you guys know that I was fairly high on him entering the season from a ceiling perspective. I talked about it a lot, though, too, that his floor was very scary, because this is only his 2nd year playing the wide receiver position. But on the year, Pryor scored just 21.6 PPR points, and he's averaging 1.1 fantasy points per target, which ranks in the 21st percentile among wideouts with 10 or more targets. He's been bad. And a huge problem is that he hasn't been used much in the red zone, even with a banged up Jordan Reed. From within the opponent's 20-yard line, Pryor has just 2 targets out of a possible 12 that Washington has thrown. And he hasn't seen a single target within the opponent's 10-yard line. Now granted, Washington hasn't run many plays from there, but still, he hasn't been used in the red zone. And the other big thing is that he's not stretching the field the way that we would ideally like him to stretch the field either. Part of the allure is that DeSean Jackson was gone and they don't have that guy to get down the field. And that could have been Terrell Pryor. But more than 40 wide receivers right now have seen more deep ball passes than Terrell Pryor has. But what are you going to do as a Terrell Pryor owner? You're not going to get any sort of return after 3 mediocre performances, so all you can do is hold and hope that things turn around. If there's one piece of good news, he is the team's number one wide receiver. He's on the field more than any other wide receiver on that team, playing 80% of the team's snaps. Add Vernon Davis. So I'll just continue with this Washington theme and talk about Vernon Davis. Jordan Reed's got injury issues, and I say issues plural because he has issues with his toes, his shoulder, and his chest. They're all hurting. That allowed Vernon Davis to see a significant run in week 3. He ended up playing a hefty 82% of Washington's snaps against the Raiders. He saw 5 of Kirk Cousins' 30 passes, and he scored a touchdown. And look, guys, this is not something new. Jordan Reed missed 4 games last year, and Vernon Davis finished as a top 15 weekly tight end in PPR formats in 3 of those 4 contests. And 2 of them actually resulted in a top 10 performance. So if Jordan Reed continues to miss time, Vernon Davis should be a very, very worthwhile option off the waiver wire. Sell Sammy Watkins. The Sammy Watkins truthers were out during that Thursday Island game against the 49ers. I love Sammy Watkins too, but in fantasy football, I also care about situation. We have to be realistic and see that the Rams have had 2+ matchups now, and Sammy Watkins has only performed well in 1 of them. Sammy Watkins has 1 good performance in 3 weeks so far this year. So let's just slow down a second with Sammy Watkins. Now, he's been very, very efficient on his targets this year, but he's still only seen a little over 16% of Los Angeles' targets in total. That's a lower target market share than wide receivers like Marquise Goodwin and Adam Humphries. And here's the thing, Jared Goff has thrown the ball deep 15 times this year. Sammy Watkins has been on the receiving end of only 1 of those throws. Sammy Watkins' average depth of target, according to Pro Football Focus right now, is 9.1. That is not a high number at all for a player who stretches the field. That's just not what we're looking for. But I think the main reason you sell Sammy Watkins right now is not just because he's coming off this big performance, but his upcoming schedule is brutal. Week 4 is not so bad against the Cowboys, but then you get the Seahawks, Jaguars, Cardinals, Giants, Texans, and Vikings. So Watkins is going to see Richard Sherman, Jalen Ramsey, Patrick Peterson, Janoris Jenkins, Xavier Rhodes. It's literally one of the worst schedules you can possibly find for a wide receiver 1 in the NFL. It's a big deal. So like I said, I think that Watkins can put together a nice week 4, but given his performance in week 3, I would totally be fine with selling him now. drop Thomas Rawls. One of the few positive things that happened for me in week three was the emergence of Chris Carson, officially. This is Chris Carson's backfield. He ended up playing 56% of Seattle's snaps in week three, and that was in a game where the team was trailing for a large portion of it. CJ Procise, their pass catching back, did see the field for 37% of the snaps, but again, he's a pass catching back. It's a negative game script. You would expect him to see the field. But the early down work was Chris Carson's. He had 11 of a possible 15 running back attempts in the offense, and he's now carried more than 48% of the team's total rushing attempts this season. Oh, right, this is about Thomas Rawls, isn't it? Well, Rawls was on the sideline for almost all the game. He played one snap. Thomas Rawls and Eddie Lacy each played one snap. This is Chris Carson's backfield. I hope that you added him earlier in the season, and you can drop Thomas Rawls now. Add Wendell Smallwood. It's so sad to see Darren Sproles tear his ACL. Everyone loves Darren Sproles. I wish that he was on the field. He's so fun to watch, but this is the reality of football, and it's unfortunate. But he is out for the season, and that's a big deal for this Philadelphia backfield. In weeks 1 and 2, Sproles played 49% and 69%, nice, of Philadelphia's snaps, which led to 12 carries and 12 targets across those two games. So you have to ask, who's going to step up? And I think it's going to be Wendell Smallwood. Of the remaining backs, he easily fits the pass-catching mold best. LeGarrette Blount doesn't know how to catch passes. He has 48 career receptions in over 100 games. And Corey Clement saw about half of the receiving market share that Wendell Smallwood did in college. Smallwood profiles most of these players in this backfield as an every down back. And he was the only one that was involved in the Eagles passing game in week three. He caught a pass on two targets. And most importantly, he played the most snaps in that backfield on Sunday. He was on the field for 57% of the Eagles snaps, whereas LeGarrette Blount was on for 29% and Clement was on for 9%. He's the best all-around running back left on the roster, and I think that he deserves an add off the waiver wire this week. Add Andy Dalton. We saw a rejuvenated Bengals offense in week three, and by rejuvenated, I mean one that can actually score a touchdown. Andy Dalton certainly did not look flawless. He missed a lot of big throws, and Tony Romo made sure that the world knew that. But he was competent from a fantasy football perspective. He scored over 16 standard fantasy points. Now, week four is a common opponent for Andy Dalton as he faces the Browns. Joe Goodberry, or at Joe Goodberry, has done a lot of work on Andy Dalton and his performances against common and uncommon opponents. Basically, opponents that he's seen a lot of over the last couple of years and opponents that he hasn't. Green Bay in week three was an uncommon opponent. The Browns in week four in the division is obviously a common opponent. And that's a little bit scary for Andy Dalton, but it's the Browns. So far this year, Cleveland surrendered 25 points per game to opposing offenses in general, and quarterbacks have scored an average of 19.4 fantasy points per game against them. And I do think that they might struggle a bit getting to Andy Dalton. We know that the offensive line is a big issue for Cincinnati right now, but the Browns rank in the bottom 10 in sacks and quarterback hits thus far in 2017. So I do think that Andy Dalton is a viable streamer here in week four. Add Jay Cutler. I think Jay Cutler is also a viable streamer despite what he did in week three against a bad Jets defense. And I know a lot of people are going to drop him because of that performance. But I'm really intrigued by his matchup in week four. He'll be in London to face the Saints, a secondary that ranks third worst in football in terms of yards per play allowed on passes that travel 15 or more yards through the air. Now that's important. Cutler has attempted 19 deep balls this year, which is tied for the eighth most in the NFL. But Jay Cutler has only played two games. He is chucking the ball deep often, and that's exactly what you want against this New Orleans Saints defense. The game itself has a high 49.5 point over-under, and the Saints are just small 2.5 point favorites. This is a great situation for a streaming quarterback. I'm all about Jay Cutler this week. Add Cameron Brate. Streaming the tight end position is pretty basic right now. Play anyone who's facing the Giants. The Giants struggled a lot last year against tight ends, and that's continued in 2017. Every single tight end that's faced the Giants has scored, and only the Patriots have allowed more PPR points to the position per game. This week, Cameron Brate is the next tight end up. Now, Cameron Brate's actually played fewer snaps than OJ Howard to start the year, but he's seen three more targets and he's ran 11 more routes than OJ Howard. That's according to Pro Football Focus. Cameron Brate is their pass-catching tight end. And I think that he's the one who's going to benefit most from this plus matchup against the Giants. Add the Cincinnati Bengals defense. The Bengals defense is coming off a 6-sack performance against the Packers, and the team is currently tied for the 5th most sacks in the NFL. Meanwhile, DeShone Kizer is consistently getting tackled behind the line of scrimmage as he looks downfield for a big play. DeShone Kizer has thrown the 2nd most deep balls in the league through 3 weeks. And it's because he's holding on to the football for so long. According to NFL.com's next-gen stats, Kizer is taking more than 3 seconds to throw each pass. That's the second slowest time in the NFL behind only Deshaun Watson. And the Browns have allowed 11 sacks as a result of this. It's not that the Browns' offensive line is that bad, it's that Deshaun Kizer holds onto the ball forever because he's looking down the field or looking to scramble. This combination makes the Bengals a must-play in Week 4. Hold CJ Anderson. As I've said, each week on the show, I'm going to be adding a 16th transaction that you can't find in the 15 transactions that's posted on NumberFire. It gives listeners a little something extra each week. This week, as I said, it's to hold CJ Anderson. I know a lot of CJ Anderson owners out there are upset about his Week 3 performance and how Jamaal Charles seemingly came out of nowhere to outperform him. But seriously, relax a bit. The snap counts were roughly the same. CJ Anderson played about 70% of the team's snaps, which is what we've seen over the first 2 weeks. Jamaal Charles taking the other chunk of that snap count. Nothing really changed. I will say this though. We may want to be slightly worried about CJ Anderson in negative game scripts, because this is the first time we saw the Broncos in a true negative game script this season. But fortunately, I think the Broncos are a strong enough team defensively to keep things close, and negative game scripts might not be the most frequent thing in the world for that team. So even in the bad performance, keep your heads up, CJA owners. He still was on the field a whole lot, and variance just hit him pretty hard in Week 3. That's going to do it for this week's 15 Transactions show, though, everyone. Thanks again for tuning in. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, please, please, please do so by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And as I've been mentioning, if you leave a rating and review on iTunes, you'll automatically be entered for a chance to win a NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. I'll be drawing a name at random at the end of the month, so go, please, leave a review, leave a rating, hopefully a good one. You can also follow me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB, and if you have any questions for this week's mailbag show, which will drop on Friday, you can hit me up on Twitter, @LateRoundQB, or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. I'll be back in your ears on Thursday with the Start Sit Show.